In the studio to talk more about all of this and to answer your questions is Mary Kay Holloway. She's a registered dietitian who is board certified as a specialist in oncology nutrition, and she's helped people at the Community Cancer Center for 16 years. Mary Kay, thanks for taking time to join us on Sound Ideas.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You can join this conversation by calling 309-438-8910. What do you eat or feed your family? Is meatless important to you or is it necessary? And what about your kids? Can you tell them no when it comes to hot dogs or other processed meats? Ask your questions at 309-438-8910. Mary Kay, was the World Health Organization report news to you? We've known about this for a while, haven't we?
Right. No, it wasn't news to me. We've known from an organization, the American Institute of Cancer Research, there is strong evidence that having a lot of red meat can raise your risk of colorectal cancer, especially. We don't know why, but we do see that evidence. So, we've known that for a while.
So we don't know if there's a particular compound in the meat or compounds or in something in the way we prepare it?
No, we do know there's different compounds, but we don't know how. We know that the HCAs can be there when you flame up meat and cook it really high.
HCAs are
heterocyclic amines.
So when you scorch the meat or char it,
you change. There's a chemical change in that meat. But we don't know how that works yet as far as what does it change in our DNA? Does it cause different things? And why is there just a increased risk for colorectal cancer, but we haven't been able to fine-tune it out with what other cancers that could be yet?
And so the research, there needs to be more research.
Oh, definitely.
Since we're pointing fingers, maybe we should talk about meat for a moment, because a BLT isn't the same thing as a baked chicken breast. What falls in the red meat category?
Well, when we talk about red meat, it's beef, pork, and lamb. A lot of times people get confused with pork because we've always been advertised as that being the other white meat, mm-hmm. but actually it is a red meat. But when you mentioned bacon, that's the other piece of that picture that they were looking at. Processed meats and the bacons, the sausages, the salamis, hot dogs, all of those things, we do see a very stronger correlation with cancer effects versus just the red meats of hamburger or steak or...
And as it concerns, you know, salami or a hot dog or a brat, do we know if there are particular compounds in processed meats that are different than red meats?
There's difference. There's nitrates, nitrites, there's different chemicals. Just the changes of the meats just from doing the preservation and putting those different pieces in. Again, what mechanism it does in our body, we're not sure. And that's the hard piece about nutrition in general. We're still trying to figure those mechanisms, but... we do see those correlations, and that's what we have to look at.
Mary Kay Holloway is a registered dietitian with the Community Cancer Center. You can ask your question at 309-438-8910. Different people react differently to carcinogens. The WHO found that eating the equivalent of two slices of bacon can increase the risk of colon cancer by 1%. And that's an average across the population. So some people may eat more and never have a problem. Some people may eat much less or none and have a big problem. Is there a safe or unsafe amount of either processed meats or red meats?
From the research that the American Institute of Cancer Research has put together, they have shown that in the red meat area, people who eat more than 18 ounces a week of red meats have that higher risk of colorectal cancers. 18 ounces, if you think about a deck of cards being 3 ounces, and you put 6 decks of cards together, that gives you a visual of how much 18 ounces of meat would look like. But on those same recommendations, they really say to avoid the processed meats as much as you can. So that would look like, you know, have it for a special occasion or certain parties, but don't try and have it a couple times a week, which sometimes...
I mean, BLTs are delicious.
They are delicious. So in the summer with that tomato and, you know, that's when it's
but
the best time to have it.
Not for every meal. So really what we're talking about here is moderation. Are people rolling the dice, though, with contracting cancer with eating any of this? Should they start moving or considering a plant-based diet?
A plant-based diet is always the way I try to teach people to go. That same research that we're all seeing, we do know that when we eat plant foods, there are certain nutrients in it that help our bodies fight even the bad things that we might be getting from the meats or the processed meats. When you have the nourishing plant nutrients counteract and help protect that DNA, that may be part of that difference. Genes are a very important piece right now of what we're looking at.
So I'm joking here, but maybe a BLT is the perfect food
where
the lettuce and the tomato cancel out the bacon.
You're right. That's exactly what we're working towards and to see, and that's exactly it.
Maybe a single serving of bacon on that BLT instead of doubling it
exactly.
up.
Too. Exactly.
So besides cancer, are there other risks? Can you talk a little bit about cardiovascular health and obesity as it relates to meat consumption?
Well, we do know that there is research with heart disease that shows having increased beef can raise your risks with heart disease. So, you know, basically you're going to find that the same recommendations for heart disease, diabetes, and cancer prevention are going to fit the same model.
We're talking about health risks associated with what you eat, specifically red and processed meats. Mary Kay Holloway is a registered dietitian who is board certified as a specialist in oncology nutrition. She's helped people at the Community Cancer Center for 16 years, and she'll answer your questions at 309-438-8910. Before we talk about different diets and the benefits of those diets, let's talk a little bit about some of the benefits of red meat. There's iron, vitamins, protein, B vitamins, zinc. Is there any reason to maintain some meat in the diet? Should people actually keep meat in their diet?
You know, there is no problem for people to continue to have meat. And sometimes it really comes down to somebody's personal ideas of whether they want to or not. There are some people we know with different food sensitivities may have food sensitivities to certain plants that they're going to need to get their vitamins, those minerals, those proteins that come from the plant foods. So nutrition is so individual that we really have to look at each person.
And again, remind us of the appropriate number of servings of lamb, pork, or beef per week.
According to the American Institute of Cancer Research, no more than 18 ounces of those in a week.
From Facebook, Amy Roser wants to know if beef bought from a local farmer and processed locally is any healthier than the store-bought beef. Is beef beef?
You know, that is still an area we're trying to figure out. We do know that when we feed something, certain foods, we can sometimes change some of the makeup of that. An example, we have changed what we feed chickens, and we can change the fatty acid ratio in that egg yolk. Makes it all better for us nutritionally. There's people out there, and there's research that says when we change the feed, we might be changing some things in that beef that could be more beneficial for us. But the research still isn't out there.
So it's a qualified yes.
Yes.
If you're going to eat beef, you might want to go local. You might want to go organic. You might want to go grass-fed.
Exactly. But we don't have the black and white. So if you have that ability to do that, but I would still say stay within those parameters of no more than 18 ounces.
There are certainly options to do that with the area farmers markets.
Sure.
and to make those connections with local local meat suppliers.
Exactly.
We talked a little bit about the health risk associated with red meats and processed meats. You mentioned some of the benefits of making sure that you have an adequate number of vegetables in your diet. And before we go to talking about different types of diets like vegan or lacto-ovo, tell me about some of the compounds in vegetables that can actually sort of counteract some of the carcinogens we may encounter in our lives.
Oh, now I could go on for this for more than just what we're doing on the show. You know, every different plant food has something that we call plant nutrients. There are hundreds and thousands of different ones that we don't even know what they are yet. We can't put them into a supplement. We've tried to. And we have found that there was one study called the CARET study, C-A-R-E-T, and they saw that people who ate a lot of orange fruit, colored fruits and vegetables actually had less lung cancer. And they went, oh, must be the beta carotene. So they did a study, and one group had the placebo, and one group had a supplement of beta carotene. And the ones who had the supplement were getting more lung cancer. They had to stop the study early. But we know there's more than beta carotene in that carrot. There's hundreds and thousands, and we don't know yet if it was something we don't know or if is it something like from garlic that makes the beta carotene have synergy, that idea of one and one does not equal two. It equals four, five, six. And it's that synergy of these plant nutrients that protects our cells, goes to our DNA, changes the bacteria in our gut. And that is a whole new area that we really need to be looking at.
So the vegetables change the digestive process and change the bacteria that help you digest food?
Right. And even when we eat more meat in our diet, that makes a different type of bacteria as well. So we know that the more plant-based foods we have, the different, more beneficial bacteria that's growing. And that's a whole new area of research.
So it may not even be synergy between garlic and a carrot. It could be a compound that hasn't been discovered yet in a carrot that's interacting with the beta carotene. We just don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And just to clarify, orange vegetables would be carrots, squash?
Squash, any of your sweet potatoes, your grapefruits, any of those kinds, yes.
What about leafy green vegetables?
Oh, whole nother area. Every different color means that there's different types of plant nutrients. And leafy greens, right now, everybody I'll be talking to, they're like, oh, I'm eating spinach now. And I'm like, oh, that's good. That's very good. But we need to move even beyond to kale is getting to be a big one. But also, we got to think collard greens, all the mustard greens, the beet greens. Each of those have such great plant nutrients that we don't have in our normal diet, and we need to start bringing those kinds of things in.
And again, not available in supplements, or have not figured out how to actually do that in supplements.
Exactly.
You have to eat the,
you know,
eat the vegetables.
Food first, always, because we can't know enough yet to be able to just say this piece of it is going to be what you need.
So what are the benefits? I guess we've already sort of touched on these, but let's talk about the benefits of going vegan, lacto-ovo, or maybe even pescatarian. Lacto-ovo allows eggs and dairy. Mm-hmm. A pescatarian would include fish. What are some of the benefits of those types of diets?
You know, the biggest benefit is that you're going to be increasing those plant foods, bottom line. And bringing in more of the vegetables, the fruits, the whole grains, the beans, the legumes, you're getting that different nutrient. And then having a little bit of those other pieces. I mean, you're going to get some of the benefits of the yogurt when you do the ovo-lacto and the egg protein from the egg whites and those other nutrients. The fish, we know with omega-3 fatty acids, there's so much good research. But bottom line, you would be bringing in more of those plants, and that's the biggest piece.
People are busy. They sometimes overbuy these kinds of vegetables, mm-hmm. and they go bad in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Is there any research or any reason to choose fresh over frozen or fresh over canned?
You know, the biggest thing with the fresh depends where it's from, because if it's been picked before it's been able to be ripened and has gone a long, long way to get to that grocery store, some of that nutrition may not be there. So don't be afraid to use frozen, because most of the time it is picked and taken right to a plant,
picked, processed, and ripe.
Exactly. And so I always tell people, have frozen, because I feel more guilty if I don't get it and make it. So I'd rather have it frozen so that I enjoy it and know that I'm doing okay with it.
Do you ever see people sort of, when they decide to go vegan, maybe, or lacto-ovo, include too much dairy in their diet and maybe have a detrimental effect on their health?
Well, and you know, yes, people do that because it's easy and it's something that we know and we like, and bringing in those vegetables sometimes means a change of recipes and things that you do. And we don't want to go overboard on those either, as far as the bringing in the other milks and everything. So keeping those serving sizes under control is important.
Is the deck of cards analogy apply here as it concerns,
you know,
dairy?
Basically, dairy, when we look at it, 8 ounces is a serving.
Hmm.
And we always see those big commercials where they're pouring big glasses and everything else, and it's really only 8 ounces. So, you know, we talked earlier about the obesity piece, and you still don't want to be having more than what you need. So 8 ounces gives you good protein, gives you calcium. It's all that amount is all you need.
As a dietitian, what do you see as direct benefits with people, individuals that decide to go vegan or lacto-ovo? Do you see diabetes being reduced? Do you see weight loss? Do you see decreased risk of heart disease, sort of a reversal?
Yes, I have seen that happen. Again, everybody's individual, and most of my population are cancer survivors. So sometimes, depending on the types of cancers, there may be hormonal changes that have gone along with some of these. That makes it a little bit more difficult at times. But yes, diabetes rates go down, heart changes happen, and we can reduce those risks. Yes.
Mary Kay Holloway is a registered dietitian with the Community Cancer Center. You can ask your question at 309-438-8910. Mary Kay, what are some tips you share with people so their change in eating habits is sustainable and there's not some sort of whiplash back to Chicago-style hot dogs every day for lunch?
You know, first of all, we need to just step back and go, okay, how much am I eating as far as the meats and where am I getting it? And then being able to step back and go, okay, well, even if you can change to a vegetarian type diet for 3 or 4 meals and get a few of those recipes under your belt, get to see how easy it can be, and then keep making changes from there. Change always takes time, and it takes thinking about it and becoming aware of it.
Is it easier? Is it better to ease into it than sort of like on the first day of the year, making a New Year's resolution and saying, okay, today I'm vegan?
It is. It is. It's much easier because life happens. And in the middle of stresses and everything else, if those things haven't been accounted for, you do go back into those old habits. And so we need to look at those and go, okay, what are those barriers to help you make that change?
And what I've been hearing from you, though, is that it's not absolutely necessary that people go vegan. It's about an appropriate amount of meat, making sure the serving sizes are what they should be in relationship to the amounts of vegetables and fresh fruit you're eating.
You are very right on. Yes.
What are the risks or things people have to keep in mind with going on a plant-based diet? Are there any nutritional risks with going vegan?
If somebody's on Coumadin and they're bringing in those green leafy vegetables, you don't want to do that right off the bat just because that changes those blood levels. Some of the other pieces that may be... It would be if they're bringing beans in all of a sudden and they're going to be going, you know what, I'm having a lot of gas.
a lot of psyllium fiber in beans.
Exactly. And there's a lot of different digestive issues that they'd be looking at. But otherwise, no.
Bill is on the air, on the line from Peoria. He has a question about processed meats. You're on the air with Mary Kay Holloway, Bill.
Hi there and good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
With regard to the red meats and the processing, How does game come into that play? You know, thinking about deer seasons and pheasants and ducks and things like that, and getting the wild game. Normally, deer processing,
right,
of course, is one thing, but when it comes to ducks and pheasants and, you know, fowl, that sort of thing, it's normally not processed. But are there any inherent dangers that way with wild game versus processed meats, as in cows and sheep?
Well, good question. And bottom line, when we're looking at the deer and that, it's not the same type of meat as, it's not the red meat idea. But it's also that wild free range. So again, we're looking at, it's a healthy, good choice of meat. The serving sizes are still the pieces you'd want to be careful of. When we look at doing, like, making it into jerky or any of those kinds of things.
Venison sausage.
Yes, and the sausages, those are going to fit into that same idea of the processed. And so, again, you don't want to have them be the mainstay of what you do, but they are okay to have, you know.
In moderation.
Oh, yeah.
Bill, a question for you. Are you a hunter?
No, I haven't been for a very long time.
Okay, do you have some wild game in your diet occasionally? Do you know people who are hunters?
I sure do know people that do and are, and no, not really, as far as having it in the diet.
Okay, mm-hmm. Bill, thanks for your question. You can join.
And one other thing,
oh,
Mike.
Oh, sure. Go, yeah.
You do an excellent job on this program, day in and day out.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for calling, Bill, and I appreciate your compliment. You can join Bill on the air at 309-438-8910. Duck isn't the same as chicken. Duck is a sort of a greasier meat.
It is.
Is it still a poultry, but it's a different kind of poultry. Is it okay to eat, or do you classify it as chicken?
It's in that poultry area. And when you look at getting the variety of different meats, just like the variety of vegetables, you're going to get different nutrients nutrients from different things. You're right, it is a fattier meat, so, and most of us don't tend to have that on our regular diets. So it's when you have it as a special occasion, or if you're a hunter and you use it, you're not going to have it every day. So it would be fine.
So we've been talking about diets, but not dieting, which is really different. Dieting, at least I don't think of dieting as a sustainable practice. It's a temporary thing to lose weight, and then you have to really change your lifestyle in order to maintain or keep that weight off.
Right.
But let's talk about paleo diets and the Atkins diet. Both of those seem to lean or could lean toward
higher
meat content
right.
because of the propensity to eliminate carbohydrates.
Right.
So what are the are those diets okay in the short term to lose weight? What are your recommendations?
You know, again, that's where research falls short, because we do see that people who switch to like some of the Atkins, they do have great weight loss. There's with the paleo, there's been a lot of people who have been affected with autoimmune diseases that have reduction of some of those symptoms by being on a more Atkins paleo type piece. I think what it really comes down to is we really need to look at getting that variety of those protein sources as well, and not just focus just on the beef and the red meat, even if you're on those diets, but look at all the other protein sources that you can get. Many people are not going to go to the whole grains just because of that idea of the high carbs, but a whole grain doesn't have as many of the carbs as some of the refined pieces would. Again, everybody is so different, and the research is not very black and white, that I would look at each person individually and work with them from there.
We've talked about serving size. What about overall portion control, the amount of food on your plate? Does that factor into overall health, simply not overeating?
You know, it does. And for a long time, even the thing to think about is our plate size has increased over these last 20, 30 years. And I'll even tell people, go back to just a regular 9-inch size plate, fill it once, have half of it be vegetables, a small portion then of meat, and a small portion of like a carbohydrate or a whole grain or pieces of that, and just fill it one time. That would be one way to portion control without trying to measure everything out.
When was the last time you ate an entire entree at a restaurant? I can't do it anymore. Half of it always ends up as my next day's lunch.
It does. I split it with my husband, and we're happy.
All right. Mary Kay, I appreciate your time on Sound Ideas today and joining us to talk about what we eat.
Thank you.
Mary Kay Holloway is a registered dietitian at the Community Cancer Center, where she's worked for 16 years. She's also a board-certified specialist in oncology nutrition. You're listening to Sound Ideas.